Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio, and how the tech are ya? It is time for a Tech Stuff classic episode. And the episode we're about to listen to, The Worst Hacking Scenes from Hollywood, is technically part one of a two-parter. Shannon Morse joined me to talk about hacking scenes in Hollywood. Shannon is she's a hacker. She's been doing the hacking routine for several years now. She's been covering hacking for years. She's very knowledgeable on the subject and was a great partner to have to talk about how Hollywood doesn't always get hacking quite right. Sit back and enjoy this episode, originally published September 7th, 2016. Guys, we've had Shannon on the show a few times, and today it's a real treat, really, because we're going to talk about some examples of hacking in pop culture and some of the ones that are incredibly awful, just terrible, inaccurate ways of showing how hacking works, as well as talk about some that get it more right than not right, which is kind of awesome. And, I mean, but to start off, we have to admit, the real world of hacking, while the results can be quite dramatic and have a huge effect, the process itself is not always cinematic.
Nope, it is not.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty boring. There's just a bunch of text on the screen and that's about it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's coding, right?
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of coding involved, a lot of Python and Bash scripts and things of that nature, and a lot of terminal work. So you don't see very much GUI or graphical user interface usage whenever you're running some kind of hack implementation. A lot of times it's just terminal.
Right. And, you know, I understand the need to stretch the truth when you're trying to create a really thrilling movie or TV show and you want to have something interesting to look at. Having your characters look at lines of code and going through a process of trying to create some sort of exploit for a vulnerability, that doesn't really hold a lot of people like on the edge of their seat. So I get it, but it is kind of a problem. And I should also mention, we're using the word hacker today a lot. But of course, as I try to mention every time I talk about hacking, hacking is a very broad term. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you are doing anything illegal. And it certainly doesn't even mean that you're necessarily working on a computer. You could be doing some hardware hacks that aren't related to software. That's important to remember. But as far as Hollywood is concerned, there's really only one kind of hacking, and that involves trying to break into a place that you're not supposed to be in.
Of course, because those are the most interesting people. They're the scary ones, and people are afraid of what they don't understand.
Right, and I imagine that a lot of screenwriters are particularly scared of hackers because, it's clear that they have no understanding whatsoever about it. And two, I mean, we've seen, especially recently, we've seen some very big stories about the entertainment industry running away from hackers attacking, and whether it's a hacker who's actually gaining access to a system or it was someone who was on the inside who just managed to exploit their access in the first place, which I would argue really isn't a hack. It's just kind of industrial sabotage at that point. But the right. Sony story would be the big example, right?
Yeah, the Sony story, I think, put a lot of fear in the entertainment industry. And I feel like the entertainment industry as a whole, with very few exceptions, are one of the genres that is the farthest behind when it comes to their own security and privacy. They're the farthest behind when it comes to a lot of things, including how they treat their women.
Yes.
But I think that it's something that they really need to start focusing on and start understanding, not only for their own security, like with for their employees, for the actors and actresses that work there, for these different companies, but also because they need to understand how to actually portray it so that more people understand it as a whole and aren't so afraid.
Right. And so we're going to dive into a discussion of some of the more entertaining and often wildly inaccurate versions of hacking in film and TV. I should also give a shout out. A lot of people on my Twitter feed suggested that I check out a subreddit. The subreddit is It's a Unix System, which is a reference to Jurassic Park. If you remember, the young lady runs up to a computer. She takes one look at it. She says, "It's a Unix system. I know this." And then she's immediately looking at a graphic user interface and identifying one block out of like 50 blocks that are on the screen and immediately makes the conclusion that all the files for the entire island are accessible from that one terminal. I don't know how she knows that. It's amazing that you automatically know that everything available on the island is on that one drive somehow.
I feel like the only way you would know that is if you were the information security professional that is working for that company.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure she was not.
She seemed like she was a little too young to be a full-time employee at that point.
Exactly.
So Jurassic Park, while it lends the quote, "It's a Unix system," to the subreddit, I didn't really include it on this list. There is one other incredibly famous example that I've talked about on a previous episode of Tech Stuff that we will hit. But first, I'm going to talk about a movie. I haven't actually seen this movie, but I have seen the sequences that involve hacking. That movie is The Core. And in the first sequence I wanted to talk about, there's a character whose handle is Rat, which could be, you know, like remote access Trojan or remote access terminal, depending upon what acronym you want to look at. Often one that is associated with hacking. And Rat is caught by the FBI. The sequence in which he's caught, he's trying desperately to erase all traces of his activities. He's got tons and tons of computers, and he's using massive magnets to try and wipe drives, and he's throwing CD-ROM disks into a microwave and turning it on high. You know, the typical stuff we do when the feds come knocking.
I love this.
But my favorite bit about this little sequence is he then is taken to an interrogation. And as he's being interrogated, he just casually reaches over and grabs a guy's cell phone out of his little holster or his pocket or whatever. But the guy's like, "Oh, it's just a cell phone. What can he do with that?" Well, Shannon, you know what people can do with cell. I mean, if you have physical access to a cell phone, it's game over. But
oh yeah.
But what this guy does, he doesn't do something to get hold of the guy's contacts. He doesn't, and this is also pre-smartphone. It's really a cell phone. He doesn't do anything like that. What he does is he takes a little chewing gum wrapper, He dials a couple of numbers on the phone, and then he uses the chewing gum wrapper to make a weird little whistling humming noise, and then casually closes the phone, tosses it back to the guy, and says, "That phone's got free long distance on it forever." That's,
I love this.
100% accurate to real life. That's exactly how it works.
Yeah, totally. So, I'm pretty sure that this is, kind of a comparison to what people would actually do, which was called phone freaking. And this was like before hacking became a really big popular norm that you would see in like online media that you see in this day.
Yeah.
So back in the day, this guy named Captain Crunch, he got his online screen name from opening up a Captain Crunch cereal box and getting out a little, I believe it was a kazoo or something similar to that.
Yeah, it was like a whistle.
And he was able to recreate or reproduce the kind of tone that you could put into a payphone to allow you to make free long distance calls. So they're using that real life scenario to their advantage in this movie, The Core, and making it seem like you can do the same thing with a gum wrapper. Now, personally, I don't believe that you can do the same thing with a gum wrapper. That seems a little bit odd. I know that you can make noises with things like that. You can also do the same thing with a piece of grass if you want to.
Yeah. Yeah,
no,
yeah, you can entertain yourself in like a third grade kind of way for hours at a time.
Yes. But,
yeah, phone freaking really worked on landlines. They worked when the phone system wasn't fully digital yet. It was a much different system. I mean, there's some very famous people who got their start as phone freaks. I mean, Steve Wozniak was in that world. The great Woz was one of the freakers of back in the 70s. But it was sort of the same thing that you would talk about hackers today. They weren't necessarily trying to game the system. They were trying to figure out, how does this work?
Like, right. They were just messing with things. They were trying to reverse engineer them and figure out how they work and put them back together and let these different pieces of technology do things that they weren't necessarily supposed to do.
Yeah.
And that's what I love so much about hacking. But then you bring it to Hollywood and they're like, oh, these are scary people. They're all going to end up in the FBI's hands. And that's not necessarily true.
Right. And to take something that worked on landlines on a payphone basis using a whistle that had, I think he even modified it slightly so it would make exactly the tone he needed to replicate the tones that the phone company was using in order to allow for this kind of thing to happen.
Yeah.
It would never work on the cell phone range at all. So, and also just what a weird line. Like, this phone's got free long distance on it forever. And you think, there's gotta be multiple ways a phone company would say, hey, something weird's going on with this one line. But
it's so good.
The core also has another great scene in it with that same hacker, same guy, Rat. And when I see him, I always think, he's an actor who also shows up as a character on the show, Supernatural, as a weird, reedy looking, demon killer guy that you would just expect to get completely obliterated the first time he shows up. But he turns out to be more capable than you would consider based upon his appearance. Anyway, he walks into a cyber cafe. He's got a CD-ROM. I think it even says Kung Fu on it, if I'm not mistaken. And he puts puts it into a cyber cafe computer. And after like leaning back and putting his hand up to his face for about 5 seconds, it ends up completely taking over not just his computer, but the entire local network and all of the screens in the cyber cafe. Pop up with this image of his rat network where he has taken over all the computers. I don't even know exactly why he's trying to take over all the computers, apart from just seeing lots and lots of what appears to be news footage, which, spoiler alert, there's a thing we can use to get that news footage. It's called a TV. You can use that without having to hack any systems. But it's just a weird little moment where he's taken over all the computers in the cyber cafe. Now, let's go ahead and make some things clear. Shannon, I know that you've addressed this on multiple episodes and other ways of reaching out to your audience. There are certain things you should be concerned about when you go and log into any kind of local area network, any kind of open Wi-Fi. If you're going to a coffee shop and you're using that kind of Wi-Fi, you need to be more aware of potential security problems.
But yes, absolutely. It's very easy if you're on your local coffee shops network or your local's hotels network for anybody to snoop on what you're doing. You may be using HTTPS, but that's not going to keep somebody from understanding what sites you are visiting. Mm-hmm. But even though that data may be encrypted, however, they're still collecting that encrypted information, and it really just depends on how a website that you're visiting is encrypting that information, whether or not they would be able to decrypt it after a specific amount of time.
Right.
So I always tell people, if they're going to use a hotel Wi-Fi or a coffee shop Wi-Fi, to use a VPN, use some way to tunnel your traffic from point A to point B so that nobody else on that network will be able to see what you're doing. They may see that you're logged on. They may see your IP address, but they won't know exactly what's going on with your traffic while you're connected. So I'm pretty sure that everybody who generally uses these Wi-Fi networks that are available for free aren't necessarily using VPNs, but it's a huge security risk for pretty much every consumer out there that's using these Wi-Fi networks.
Right. And whereas in the core, we were talking, it's really hardwired computers that are part of the cyber cafe. You just sit down at a terminal and log in so that you have access to everything on that machine. That's scary too. I mean, it's kind of like using a computer at the library. You want to be very careful about the kinds of activities you do on that machine, because it's not really yours, and you don't really, and you don't want to go so far to cover your tracks that you're actually causing problems for the real purpose of that machine. Still not quite sure what he was trying to do. It was like he was setting up his own little botnet. Also, if you are setting up a botnet, probably a bad idea to have a graphic pop up on everyone's screen saying, hey, your computer's mine now.
Yeah, so it's in today's age, it is very popular for people to use ransomware, which will basically announce its
presence.
Availability on your computer. Yeah, it'll announce its presence on your machine to let the user know, hey, I've just encrypted all the information, all the photos, all the documents that is on your computer. Now you have to pay me like one Bitcoin to get your data back. And then you pay that Bitcoin and you may or may not get your data back. So, ransomware, it's a big thing. But in the case of this one, in the case of RAT, yes, you can install like malware or something like that on a CD. That's entirely possible. You can put pretty much anything on a CD. And then it looks like he's running this CD through the entire network, which you can install malware through pivoting a network's open ports or open IPs so that you can put the same malware on several different computers. But it's never a good idea to let everybody know what the heck you're doing if you're doing something that you shouldn't necessarily be doing in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's there for dramatic effect. But if you're the one person in the cyber cafe who isn't visibly freaking out when all the computers switch over, here's a little hint. They're going to figure out it was you, right? I mean, that's kind of like, if you're the one guy not surprised that everything's on fire, you probably set the fire. I'm just saying. Shannon and I will be back to talk more about the worst hacking scenes from Hollywood after this quick break. Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Our next example comes from one of my favorite movies of all time.
Oh my gosh, me too. I love this movie.
The Net.
Yes.
Oh, it's so great. It's so cheesy and wonderful. The Net also is a movie in which a character actually has her identity stolen, and very prescient for its time. It's not like it got everything wrong. Some of the stuff it actually predicted quite well. For example, best prediction of any movie ever, it predicted being able to order pizza online. This was before the dot-com bubble even began. The movie came out in the mid-90s, so this was actually pretty advanced. The people behind the film said, we wanted to be able to let our character make an activity online that would stress how she was distancing herself from other people. She was trying her best to limit the amount of interaction she had with other human beings. It stresses her loneliness, also her paranoia, to some extent. And it was a neat way of doing it, and it also ended up being accurate. However, that being said, there's a bit in the very beginning, it's right when she's going to order pizza, when she's on the phone with a client, and she does essentially tech support and really helps people who have been attacked by a virus recover their systems. And it takes her like no time at all to identify what the virus is on this customer's computer, which she does not have access to. She's accessing it remotely. She identifies the virus, she sequesters the virus, she removes the virus, plus apparently does repairs to the system so it starts working again. And that takes her less time than it would take for her to order the pizza. That's incredible. I mean, every security firm should hire her.
She's a genius, apparently.
Yeah.
So I like making the comparison between Sandra Bullock's character in The Net to an actual penetration tester that we have in the 2000s or in the 2010s. In the 2010s, penetration testers go through contracts. They go through a company. They're usually hired on by a large firm to go through their security and make sure everything's okay. They have to write reports. Everything has to go through a financialist before they're actually paid for any of their work. They don't actually discuss how much they're getting paid with the client. They discuss how much they're getting paid with the company that they are salaried through. So in the case of Sandra Bullock's character here, she's talking about, you know, oh, yeah, I mean, he's like, yeah, I'm going to, you know, pay X amount of money. And he's like, I don't care how much it costs. It's worth it. And that's not necessarily something that you would talk to the penetration tester about.
Right.
Because when you do, they're going to make their time with you as a client much longer to make it seem like a much more important case.
Yeah. So if you do, you know, it's kind of like what Scotty would say, is that he'd figure out how long it was going to take him to do a task. And then he would give the captain a time that was longer than what it would take him to do. In that case, it wasn't so that he could get overtime. It was so that he could impress the captain by finishing early. Right? He's like, I told you it was going to take me 3 days, but I really put my nose to the grindstone and got it done in a day and a half. And
exactly.
The captain's impressed. Like, wow, you're amazing. In this case, it would be, yeah, that's probably going to take me, you know, I don't know, a week's worth of work, and you're done in, you know, 5 hours, and then you're just billing the time.
Right. So during this conversation that these two have, it sounds like she's a red teamer, like she's a penetration tester that works for a big security firm, and she's talking to her client though, but her actions make me think that she's a freelancer. So I'm not sure what's going on here. I think that that it was produced a little bit confusingly.
Yeah.
But now that I understand how penetration testing works, even though I am not one myself, I was quite confused by this scene.
Yeah, I think it was, out of all the errors that we're talking about today, it's one of the less egregious, because again, unless you were to show like that time had obviously passed a significant amount so that she had had time to really identify what was happening and then respond to it, it's not that big a deal compared to some of the other versions that we've got in this episode. So I'm gonna give this one a pass. It's not as bad as it could have been. It's certainly not as bad as the next one.
Oh my gosh. Can you just talk about NCIS?
Yeah, let's talk about NCIS for a bit, because, you know, NCIS, first of all, it has one of the most infamous, awful hacking scenes in Hollywood, and so much so that there are multiple versions of the clip we're going to talk about on YouTube. My favorite, titled Two Idiots, One Keyboard. But yeah, let's talk about NCIS for a second here. So we've got a character in NCIS who is sort of, she's the young hip hacker character who is the one responding in this particular scene to an attack that's coming in. That attack is being represented by lots and lots of pop-ups of just strings of characters meaninglessly appearing all over her computer monitor. And her response is that each one of these is absolutely meaningful, and she knows exactly what's happening. The hacker is attacking their systems and trying to get at very secure data, and is quickly winnowing through all the different security. And so she's just furiously typing on her keyboard in response. And her coworker, who's standing next to her and asking her questions and giving her suggestions that don't necessarily mean very much, ends up deciding to help her out by simultaneously typing on the same keyboard she's typing on. So you have four hands typing on the same keyboard at the same time.
So bad.
Dear Hollywood, that is not how keyboards work. A computer can't tell which person is typing which thing. It would just come out as a super garbled mess.
Not to mention the frustration. Like, have you ever had somebody come up and just, like, start pressing keys on your keyboard? Because it's very irritating.
It is.
There's no way that these two characters would be able to type on the same keyboard at the same time. That's ridiculous.
It feels like a violation when someone does that to me. Like
yeah.
if they're like, move, even if it's preceded by move, I'll show you. I'm like, no, you'll tell me and then I'll do it. This is my computer and I don't let you touch it. Yeah, this was one of those sequences where really the whole purpose of this scene was to show how a non-tech savvy, pragmatic guy has a solution to a problem that the two tech wizards completely overlook. So in a way, it's about taking down the tech wizard folks a peg or two because they're not thinking practically. They're too filled with panic. So you've got these two characters who are responding in real time to a security threat, as if they're doing battle with the hacker. And this is a common thread in a lot of television and movies that's not terribly accurate in the real world scenarios. But they are acting like the keystrokes they're doing are going to end up either booting the hacker out or securing some of the data away from the hacker. And they're just furiously typing when the pragmatic guy walks behind the computer system and unplugs it, thus saving them from the hack because now there's no connection for the hacker to exploit.
Except what he did was actually make it worse because now they don't have a computer that they can work through to hopefully find the hack, find the open port that this guy is coming through, this attacker, and close it off. So he's unplugging a computer as opposed to going to the server and cutting that off and turning off the server. He's just unplugging one of the open PCs.
Right.
And that just... drives me nuts. Okay, I wanted to throw things at my TV when I was watching this scene because I was like, this is so bad. It's so bad.
Yeah, this one's probably, out of all the ones that we have, this one's probably maybe not the worst, but it's way up there. And it's
terrible.
It's clearly played for laughs, at least a little bit for laughs. Maybe not like outright belly laughs, like, you know, anyone who knows what a computer is probably chuckling. But it's obviously played for this little moment where the pragmatic character can kind of be a smug jerk face and be like, haha, see, I thought of it first. And the other two characters are like, why didn't we think of that? And as, as Shannon points out, because it doesn't solve the problem.
No, it does not.
Yeah, I highly recommend if anyone is unfamiliar with this, go look for NCIS Two Idiots, One Keyboard and watch this scene and really appreciate it. I also liked when I was reading comments about this. One of the comments I read in that subreddit was the part of the scene that completely pulls me out of it is the fact that when the guy takes a bite of his sandwich, it's such a tiny little bite. It lost all credibility with me there. No one eats a sandwich like that.
Oh, that's so funny.
Redditors are great. Now, next on our list is Swordfish, which actually has quite a few awful, awful hacking scenes, some of which involve material not appropriate for this podcast. And so I did not include those scenes when I wrote to you. Yeah, there's one in particular where a guy is being tested to see if his hacking skills are elite enough to join Travolta's
team. Yeah, that scene is awkward.
It is awful. It is terrible in so many ways, but that one was so bad that I was like, no, I can't. That's not going on the list. So instead, I looked at a different one, and Hugh Jackman's playing the hacker, and he's trying to get access to a system. And the way that they decided to depict this was they show a little cube on the screen, and he's building onto this cube with other cubes to make what looks like essentially a Rubik's Cube-sized digital construct. It's all virtual. There's no actual physical cubes. And this is what represents getting access to a system, somehow building a three-dimensional virtual object out of smaller three-dimensional virtual objects. Now, Shannon, is that in fact how that looks? Like, when you're trying to access a system, you're confronted with a Rubik's Cube that you have to construct virtually?
Yeah, so I'm going to say no.
Shucks.
So for me, this looks like they are trying to show their viewers a graphical compilation of what coding would look like once you finally compile your code and you get the A-OK that everything is okay and there are no errors. So that's what it looks like to me. If you see actual code, if you see somebody building a virus or building a worm, or like in this case, Hugh Jackman's character is building a worm, you'll see lines and hundreds of lines of code. And then at the end, they'll probably choose, like go into the GUI and choose to compile code. And then the interface that they're using will give them the okay and tell them that there are no errors. But in this case, he's building a Rubik's Cube on his computer, and it looks nothing like what actual compilation looks like.
Yeah. Compiling code is, to give you guys a little bit of an insight into how computers quote unquote think, we use computer languages in order to construct programs. And the computer languages are written in such a way that a computer understands what operation it needs to perform in order to progress through the program. Ultimately, that stuff gets compiled, and you have like high-level computer languages and low-level computer languages. And then you eventually get down to the point where you get to machine code, and that's where you're getting into the binary codes, zeros and ones, where most humans, the vast majority of humans, nearly all humans, are not capable of reading that. at least not with a whole lot of time on their hands.
Right.
so that's why we have these programming languages, to kind of bridge the gap between the language that computers speak and the languages that we speak. So if you're completely unfamiliar with coding languages or programming languages and you take a look at it, it looks like nonsense, right? It for someone who is completely unschooled, it looks like you would have to be a genius in order to use it. But in fact, it follows very specific rules. So once you learn those rules, you know, it does take, there is a learning curve, but you do get to a point where you start feeling a little confident with that stuff.
Exactly. And there's plenty of programmers that I know who never learn every single rule in a specific language that they know. But they have books and books. They have, you know, definitions and posters and things of this nature so that they always have a reminder. So they're able to write different kinds of programs. But as long as you know a few general rules for any language that you're working with, you can write a program. It's very hard. It is very complicated, but it's possible.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not going to look like you're building a cube. Unless, of course, your program, once executed, is a cube-building program. In which
exactly.
case, if it looks like you're building a cube, congratulations, you coded it correctly.
We're going to take another quick break from the episode, and we'll be right back after these messages from our sponsors. Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Our next one is one of my favorite examples of bad hacking because it takes me back to my childhood. I had a discussion with some of my coworkers here about this particular movie, and some of them couldn't remember ever seeing it. Some of them remembered seeing it as a kid on video. I remember seeing this in the theater because I'm old. Superman 3. So in Superman 3, you've got a character played by Richard Pryor, who is a computer programmer, and he goes to work for a company. And he's a data entry guy. For some reason, the data entry folks at this company all have to wear like slippers and stuff. It's almost like it's a clean room, like kind of a clean room, but not really a clean room. And he finds out that everyone in the company is paid. Their payment involves fractions of a cent that end up getting rounded down. So if this sounds like Office Space, it's very much the same sort of plot. He figures out, hey, what if I took all the fractions of a cent that otherwise go unaccounted, they're just floating around out there, and I pay myself all those fractions of a cent so that I make a real huge amount of money, because once you accumulate all of them, it actually amounts to something significant. But because each individual little appearance of it is tiny, no one takes notice of it, right? Like if I took a half penny, no one is going to care. If I take a billion half pennies, suddenly it matters. But he does this by staying late one day and turning on his computer. And he does type some stuff with one hand on a little bitty keyboard that then makes text start to disappear and appear like one letter at a time, to a point where it's a very common thing in Hollywood, right? That the display has some sort of weird effect to it that indicates that, yes, something is happening, like a hacker is attacking or the system is being compromised. Once he does that, he types in a command that essentially just says, hey, pay all the fractions of a cent to me. And it's written out in more or less natural language. And then he hits enter and it works. A lot of problems with this. The big one being natural language. Like we just said just a second ago, computers do not understand the languages that we communicate with to each other. Not on their own. They have to be taught how to do that.
Right. So, they don't automatically speak English.
Yeah. If you ever open up a command line on any kind of computer, doesn't matter what operating system, pick one, whether it's Linux or DOS or whatever, you get to that command line, and you try and type in full English sentences to see if you can make your computer to do stuff, you're going to be sorely disappointed.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. It's not like a search bar with Google. I mean, the web has really spoiled us in that anyone who has not had experience with computers before the web was a thing doesn't really understand that when you get to the command line, it's not like a search field. Like you're not.
I would say the GUI has spoiled us.
Yes, yeah. I side note. Again, I'm old enough where DOS was the way to interface with a computer when I was a kid, or Apple Basic. But I was mostly using DOS at that point. And then you had the Mac come out in 1984. They took the GUI. They didn't create the GUI, the graphic user interface. They actually kind of took that from Xerox PARC. Xerox PARC really kind of pioneered that. Then Microsoft came out with Windows, and I resisted switching to Windows for a very long time and eventually broke down to get Windows when it became clear that all the software coming out only would be supported through Windows and not through DOS. And,
wow.
And to this day, I'm bitter about that. Because I taught myself all the tree commands, darn it.
I grew up with Windows since I was a kid, so it was always I started in the GUI, graphical user interface. I didn't start with commands.
Yeah, but this is where Shannon makes me feel old.
Yeah, I was born in the 80s, so yeah. I think that's the difference.
All right, that's fair. That's fair. Go ahead.
I love you, Jonathan.
I love you too, Shannon. It's fine. every co-host I have makes me feel old because I'm older than everyone but one podcaster at this company. So pray. Continue.
So I actually liked this Superman 3 scene because back in the day before I was born, it was very popular among people all over the place, no matter what company you were working with, to deal with fractions of a penny, because even a penny in as a change in pricing would be a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So people would be like, okay, well, it's a penny and a half. And I believe at one point there was even a half cent coin that was distributed in the United States. So this was a thing. You can still see it in this day and age at gas stations. Whenever you go to a gas station, you see on the sign, it says like gas is $2.95 and 9/10 of a penny. That's from back in the day when they would use these exact precise measurements for gasoline distribution at gas stations. So that really is a thing. The whole hacking scenario of this scene is very false. You can't do a specific distribution of money in that nature. And anybody who has access to that kind of information, who is working for a company, should not have that access in the first place, especially if they're getting paid and they're not like a chief operating manager of that company.
Right. Yeah. It's the idea that you would have these dumb terminals, like I am assuming they were dumb terminals. I am assuming they were all connected to a main system as opposed to each being individual computers. But in either case, you would have limitations on what any of those terminals could access. But because of his leap programming skills, he's able to bypass that and get access to the mainframe. I'm pretty sure they use it as a mainframe. Mainframe, by the way, is also a great general term that Hollywood has misused throughout all the computer films. But it's one of those things that's never explained how he does it. It's just a thing that happens in the movie. They're not drawing attention to it. It's not an important thing other than the fact to illustrate that, one, he is smart. Two, he doesn't see anything ethically wrong with bending the rules, because in his mind, these fractions of a cent, they're not doing anything, right? They're not,
right.
They're not in an account. They're not being used by the company. They're just kind of loose somehow. They're in the company's ownership, but no one's doing anything with it. So therefore, if no one's doing anything with it, no one's going to miss them when they're gone. So that's kind of how he justifies it. And eventually he becomes one of the, he's more of a reluctant villain in the movie, but he's one of the villains in Superman 3.
Ah, okay.
If you have not seen Superman 3, good job. Continue on that track. Don't feel tempted to change that. It is not a good movie. It's better than Superman 4, although my coworker Joe would probably trounce me for saying so. Superman 4 is awful. The next example we have is Numbers, which I love just because of the way it mischaracterizes IRC, which is there's a scene in which people are trying to figure out what these two different hackers are trying to do, and they don't know, and they aren't sure how they're going to track down the hackers and learn what they're trying to do. But then one of the characters says, oh, we got to go on IRC because that's where all the hackers go to chat, and they use handles. You know, they don't use their real name. They use handles on IRC, and that way they can secretly chat to each other. And then they use this weird, meaningless analogy talking about two ships that are sailing across the ocean, and they meet in the middle of the ocean, and they exchange illegal goods, and then they sail away. And because the wake of a ship fades so quickly, they leave no trace behind. That's the same thing as IRC. They actually do this whole sequence where that ship analogy I just talked about is visualized on screen, because, folks, IRC is boring. Like, showing IRC on screen is incredibly dull. So it's way more exciting to have a visualization of a meaningless ship analogy.
Yeah, IRC is super boring to look at. But it's very fun. You can make lots of friends in IRC. So
yes.
It is called Internet Relay Chat. Mm-hmm. So that is a sure thing. People do use LeetSpeak in IRC, even though LeetSpeak is not that hard to read.
Right.
And her definition going into the ships made absolutely no sense to me as an IRC user.
Yeah.
Because when I pop into IRC and then when I leave, my chats are still there, and they are still there for anybody to see who was also logged in at the same time.
Yep.
So saying that they disappear after X amount of time is not necessarily true, because anybody with a very, very simple script can capture everything that was said in an IRC for X amount of time, for whatever time that they want to save a file for, and then they can upload that file anywhere that they want to.
Yeah.
So saying that this information disappears is completely false.
I love that there's a I'm pretty sure it's the same one. I'm not watching the clips as I'm going through them, so I'm not entirely certain, but I think there's a moment in this where they have a desperate, like, take a screenshot. And she does it like at the last second before the connection's broken. And I was laughing so hard at the idea of, oh yeah, you got to take a screenshot or it's gone forever.
It's
pretty ridiculous. And there is a funny little exchange where the lady says, like, they'll be speaking in Leet, but don't worry, I also speak Leet. I'm like, oh, screenwriter, you're so adorable.
Oh, so funny. Yeah, Leet's easy to speak, so anybody can do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just replacing certain characters with other characters that look similar to the ones you're replacing, and then sometimes purposefully misspelling words because someone at some point misspelled things people thought was funny. And they went with it. Like Pwn. Pwn is a great example. PWN. It's supposed to be own, but someone just did a typo, and then that typo became the word.
Yep.
That's the lovely thing about it. And that's it for the first part of the worst hacking scenes from Hollywood. Sadly, there's no shortage of subsequent terrible hacking scenes out of Hollywood. It's one of those things that admittedly can be a little tricky to portray in an exciting and dramatic fashion. And so a lot of liberties are taken when it comes to showing hacking on screen. Next Friday, we will have part two of this little two-part series. Shannon again will be on the show, and we'll talk more about the worst scenes, well, hacking scenes from Hollywood. If those are the worst scenes from Hollywood, it'd be a much longer show. I hope you are all well, and I'll talk to you again really soon. Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeira. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.